Town meeting tonight. What is youth's role in defense of democracy? Town meeting tonight.
And the friends, is Miami's cordial welcome to you and America's town meeting of the air on the occasion of the first visit of this world-famous forum to the state of Florida. More than 5,000 people are gathered here under the stars in beautiful Bayfront Park in Miami. And on the platform with the speakers are Mayor Orr, our host, Reverend Richard Evans, Vice President of the Florida Congress on Democracy, which opens its annual convention with this meeting tonight, Bernard McFadden, and other distinguished guests. And now, Miami welcomes our special guest, the founder and moderator of America's Town Meeting of the Air, George V. Denny, Jr. Mr. Denny.
Good evening, neighbors, and from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for your greetings. This is a most impressive and magnificent sight. 5,000 Americans in one of the country's great vacation centers turned out to participate in this modern adaptation of a great American institution, the early New England town meeting. Truly, New England comes to Florida. After this experience here in Miami, I expect we'll have to move our town meetings into Madison Square Garden when we get back to New York. At any rate, you've set New York a great example. But thanks to radio and the National Broadcasting Company in particular, America's Town Meeting of the Air is a nationwide institution with thousands of town meeting clubs and discussion groups and unnumbered listeners all over America who carry on these discussions long after we go off the air. That's the real purpose of town meeting. We are particularly glad to welcome to our circle tonight many new Florida groups which have become associated with the town hall movement. Because the Florida Congress on Democracy places most of its emphasis upon youth's role in democracy, it's fitting that we discuss tonight what is youth's role in the defense of democracy. In war, he's first to go. In depression, he's first to feel its effects. If we adults make a mess of things, it's youth that must carry on. No system of government provides as much individual freedom as democracy. It's also true that no system places so much responsibility upon the individual citizen. How shall we discharge our responsibilities to youth in today's world? My old schoolmaster used to define education in two words: learning, responsibility. But how do we teach youth? And how does youth best learn responsibility today? Shall we throw him overboard and let him sink or swim? Or shall we use water wings? As youth is so much dependent upon the kind of world we provide for him, we've invited to our platform a distinguished college president, Mr. George B. Cutton of Colgate University, an eminent United States senator, the Honorable Claude D. Pepper of Florida, and the youthful mayor of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the Honorable Carl F. Zeidler. Also, we had to hear briefly from young Albert McFadden of Sarasota, Florida, the winner of the Florida High School Essay Contest on the subject of tonight's meeting. And now it's my great pleasure to present our first speaker, Mr. Cutton, the president of Colgate University. Dr. Cutton.
I shall take it for granted that defense like charity begins at home. Little use would be to defend democracy abroad and lose it in America. What this defense should be depends upon our definition of democracy. Democracy is not a gratuity. It is a conquest. It cannot be given. It must be captured. Like manna, it cannot be obtained once for all, but must be gathered anew every morning. Our fathers who first achieved it were not panhandlers who begged it from others. They went out and worked for it and fought for it. The charge has been made time and again that our young people are no longer devoted worshippers of our democratic principles, but are wandering after false gods in the form of certain undue popularisms. Whether or not that is so, I do not presume to say, but I am sure it need not be so. We can attract them to the same kind of loyalty to our governmental patterns as we ourselves have had. But how can we engender loyalty? The law of loyalty is simpler than that of gravitation. It is this: we love not those who do most for us, but those for whom we do most. Not gratitude, but sacrifice begets loyalty. If we want disloyal youth in this country, all we have to do is to continue the governmental paternalism which we have started lately. Shower them with everything and demand of them nothing. Impress upon them that the country owes them a living and crowd upon them so-called Social Security so that they will be encouraged to become irresponsible and indifferent. There is no better medium for the culture of every kind of disruptivism. If we want loyal youth, let us demand of them a sacrificial heroism. When we treat our young people as craven and spineless and irresponsible, they will respond in kind. But when we demand and expect of them lives of free, energetic, and independent citizenship, they'll not fail us but go beyond our fondest wishes. Listen while Jesus talks to his disciples. They shall lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And some of you shall they cause to be put to death, and ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. What happened? They left all and followed him. God never did a better thing for the children of men than when he threw Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden and told them to hustle for themselves. He thus gave the race its first upward boost and postponed economic security for a million years. Thou shalt earn thy bread by the sweat of thy brow was not a curse, as the lazy and the shiftless have tried to make us believe, but the first formulation of the law of progress. There is such a thing as economic and social security, but no government can hand it to us on a golden platter. It is only found in the industry, the initiative, and the courage of the people. That is the real social and economic security, and there's none other. Few know that there were two bands of pilgrims which came to America, both so far as we can ascertain of equal character and ability. One landed on a West India island where everything was easy and comfortable and was never heard of afterward so far as influencing its time or environment. The other landed on an inhospitable shore, was met by savage Indians, and was forced to obtain sustenance from a none too fertile land. The latter became the spiritual and economic foundation of our nation and our democracy. The very success of previous civilizations has always proved to be the cause of their downfall. Is there another civilization tottering for the same reason? The problem today is this. How can we impel the youth to their greatest endeavor for themselves and for their country when civilization is bathing them in ease and leisure? Initiative buries as the square of the pressure. If the success of our civilization prevents our driving them from behind, we must entice them to reach forward toward attractive situations. There is only one way to spur them to initiative and industry in a leisurely world, and that is by ensuring and increasing the rewards to the successful. Some persons disguised as intelligent beings have been talking about removing the profit motive from industry. Of course, it doesn't imagine any method supposedly used to restore prosperity more ridiculous than to crucify the successful men upon a cross of misrepresentation with a crown of invectives upon their brow, and at the same time to glorify and to reward the failures. We have been hearing a lot of moronic utterances lately about social justice, and it is time somebody protested. If social justice means taking away the earnings of the industrious and the efficient and giving them to the lazy and the incompetent, then the English language has a bad twist to starboard and somebody has his wires crossed. Such a procedure would be the most impudent piece of injustice. Not less rewards, but more to the successful. Let them name their own salaries. They are worth it. They are the only hope we have. Let us publish abroad to the youth of the land that success will no longer be a signal for misrepresentation, abuse, and persecution, but that on the successful our richest gifts will be bestowed. Nature has always let the burden of failure rest and rest heavily upon the unsuccessful and showered unstinted rewards upon the successful. That was her method of bringing us to our present position, and that has not been improved yet. If given the insurance of unhampered opportunity for initiative and industry, our youth would respond with unbounded loyalty. It is democracy which has made America great. Democracy is not a form of government. It is an exaltation of character which finds its final expression in a form of government. It was because we had the independence, initiative, industry, and sacrificial spirit to subdue a continent and to make it bring forth and blossom that we were able to govern ourselves. It is this spirit of adventure, so characteristic of youth, which found its culmination in democratic government. Democratic government is not the root, but the fruit. I suppose my generation is at fault for many of the things which our modern youth is charged. At fault because we have called them to a parasitic pauperism instead of to a sacrificial heroism. We misjudge them. I'm sure they would have responded to a call to sacrifice. The character necessary for democracy at its best is not made in a vacuum. It is what happens to us when we rebound from a difficult situation. I wish I could unfold a standard before you and invite you to sacrificial service. I should expect a ready response. I should see you stand row by row and section by section. I should see you march down the aisle shoulder to shoulder, and forgetting ease and luxury and self-indulgence, enlist as did your great-grandfathers in 76, your grandfathers in 61, and your fathers in 17. I hope no such call to arms may again be necessary. But there is a cause in which I trust all may be able to unite. The cause of our nation and our principles. And with democracy spread on the banner, I'd hurl a virile challenge of hardship, endurance, initiative and independence, and even of death. And I'd have no fear of the result. I know you'd respond. Democracy is our most valued trust, and I could safely place it in your care. Thus challenged, I know you defend it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cutten. And now I take pleasure in presenting to you your own distinguished United States Senator, the Honorable Claude Pepper. Senator Cutten.
Mr. Chairman, friends of Miami, and America's town meeting of the air, certain sad and tragic facts about American youth have at last forced their way into public consciousness. When the first census of the United States was taken in 1790, there were 782 adults for every 1,000 children. By 1930, the census showed 2 adults for every 1 child. Now there are 3 adults to every 1 youth, and it is estimated that by 1960, there will be a ratio of 4 adults to 1 youth. Youth, therefore, faces an adult competition never before confronting it. To relieve population pressure and unemployment in the earlier days of our history, there was the frontier and the homestead beckoning the enterprising youth and his brave young bride. There is no frontier now. On the contrary, we find the number of farm boys coming of age each year is twice as great as the number of farms falling vacant. As machines have gained in efficiency, the number of needed workers in the nation in proportion to output has declined. Today, for example, our production level is approximately that of 1929. But something like 3 million fewer people are required to do the same work. Moreover, there is a net gain of over 500,000 new workers each year in the employable age group because of people living longer than they did. With these pressures on the labor market, it is not surprising that 200,000 rural youth and 250,000 urban youth each year reach working age and find no job available. One little known feature of the present situation is that the number of youth 15 to 19 years of age in our population now is at its all-time maximum. That is, above what it has ever been in the past and greater than it is estimated ever to be again in our population. Upon uncomplaining youth, the Depression has fallen with particular severity. Even as early as 1928, there were the suffering children of our 1.5 million unemployed workers. In the early 1930s, when bank suspensions representing the freezing or the loss of family savings were averaging 2,700 to 4,000 a year, when family homes were being lost at the rate of more than 1,000 a day, when 15 million American workers had no job, the cyclonic winds of economic distress left in their wake shambles of scattered families, shattered fortunes, and blighted hopes for the America of tomorrow. As a consequence, youth fell out of school, and in frightening numbers, male and female, dropped back through the centuries into the nomadic life of their primitive ancestors. The census of unemployment in 1937 showed that almost a third of the total number of unemployed workers fell in the youth group of 15 to 24 years of age. Higher by far than any older group. This condition of the youth of America was one of the most alarming of all problems which faced the nation and President Roosevelt upon his inauguration in 1933. You know something of what has been done by the National Administration in the past 7 years in an effort to aid the youth of America. Of the 2 million who have received aid and instruction in the CC camps, of the more than 3.5 million who have found it possible to work so as to aid their way through public school and college, and then when out of college, to get assistance from the NYA in learning a trade or a vocation as a life's work. Of the Federal Unemployment Service, and of the many other things which the government has done to help the youth of today. But still, in spite of all these efforts, there are yet more than 4 million boys and girls in America out of school and out of work. To me, the most significant statement made by the president in the recent campaign was his announced determination to see to it that all the boys and girls of America shall have a job. While the whole nation approves and applauds these efforts, neither these unemployed youth nor those millions more struggling against heart-rending handicap receive any sympathy from some who purport to speak a strange doctrine of Americanism today. They say, away with this motley calling. Down with all these helping hands. Let the fit survive. When the modern Keynes asked, am I my brother's keeper? They would tell him no. Forget the silly sentimentalism of the Good Samaritan. They tell us, go back to nature's law. The strong live, the weak die. And for the economic order, they proclaim, let the rule be the simple plan. He may take who has the power, and he may keep who can. It makes no difference to them that youth finds today a highly mechanized and specialized world which no other generation has had to meet. They care not that the very edifices of civilization are cracking and crumbling under the strains and stresses of primitive forces which would apply the law of the herd to the whole human race. They hear not the speeches of men which are like the blood howl of the wolves in the nighttime. Yes, there will always be the few who can find their way to the top, the one strong one whom nature has made a giant to stride across all that obstinate circumstance may throw in his path. But I speak of the spirit of a democracy where the lowest rises to the dignity of the near divine, and every rude hut and humble cottage is the home of one of God's dignitaries, an American citizen. I speak of those who do not need to be strengthened with the handicap of undernourished bodies and untrained minds and unskilled hands to feel in their souls the urge of those relentless impulses which will lead them to scale the heights of labor and achievement. I know too well the integrity of American character to fear that a tender affection for these brave spirits as they walk in farewell across the threshold of home to meet in mortal combat a disordered earth, to fear that a sympathetic benediction upon their unbowed and unblooded heads will take out of them the dynamic consciousness that they are Americans. Now we know they go to Armageddon. God grant us the purpose and the power to help them more.
Thank you, Senator Pepper. And now we have the issue clearly put. It's a great challenge to any persons or group of persons trying to build a program to select representative American youth. And we are not perfect. However, we are attempting to bring to you two representative youths, the youngest mayor of any metropolitan city in the United States will be our next speaker, who's done a great job in the city of Milwaukee, the Honorable Carl F. Zeidler, mayor of that city. Mayor Zeidler.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of America's Town Meeting of the Air, I come here tonight as a young American to tell the young men and women and the boys and girls of my country about the debt we owe this America of ours. And right now, I want to cite a horrible example of our failure to pay this debt, if fail we do. Let's look at people like us in Europe and Asia tonight. People by the millions, our cousins over the oceans. Right now, at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, where are they? Enslaved in armies, toiling in work camps, making things to kill people with. These are the lucky ones, with a job and shelter and food. And the unlucky ones, they're suffering in concentration camps and prisons, dying by the roadsides, dying of starvation and all the other wounds of war, a war that the common people lost to three glorified political bosses named Adolf and Benito and Joe, largely because of the failure of those common people like you and me to study, to understand, and to operate government of, by, and for the common people. In all those once free countries, they left the business of government to the professionals, just as most of us are doing in America today. It can't possibly happen here, we say, and so we turn on some dance music or dance off to the movies to forget the horrible example. And as we dance and dream, the same type of men that have brought back the Dark Ages to Europe plot and map out their greatest conquest of all, the United States of America. They won't need armadas and armies and skies full of bombers to take us over. We'll collapse of our own weaknesses and practically roll out the red carpet for them unless we get good and busy pretty quick on the vitally serious business of making democracy an effective working mechanism instead of an academic theory here in America. How are we going to do it? I'll tell you how I think it can be done, how we are trying to do it in Milwaukee. We young people started years ago to learn the business of government in our own town meetings. We brought in speakers to tell us how streets should be paved and what they should cost, why the city's bonded indebtedness was what it was and why, and how it could be cut down and paid up. We study tax problems, the awful questions of crime and disease and vice, the prosaic questions of municipal bookkeeping and accounting. And at last, we decided that we could do a far better job of running Milwaukee than could the political bosses that sat serenely in City Hall with 24 years of unbroken successes at the polls behind them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we took over last April. I'm 32 years old and the mayor of that city of 600,000 people. But I am only one of the many thousands of Milwaukee youth that made this victory possible. But our victory wasn't won at the polls. It's been won in the accomplishments of our administration. And here are some of them. In the last 9 months, reduction of 30 cents per $1,000 in the tax rate, bringing Milwaukee 59 cents below the national average taken of 252 American cities. Lowered the interest rate on city borrowings to 0.75%, the lowest in 94 years of Milwaukee history. Cut the per capita bonded indebtedness to the point where it's now the lowest in America. Made our city second highest in national safety and lowest in the death rate from tuberculosis. Organized a countywide cooperative purchasing board, making purchases for all governmental units of that greater city of 800,000 people, eliminating waste motion, needless expenditures, wasted red tape, and saving thousands of dollars every month of the year. And when we told the American Legion National Convention at Boston last fall what we had done, they decided that the only possible place on earth for their 1941 convention was the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we've only just begun up there in Milwaukee. We're still holding our meetings to teach ourselves this business of government. And some of us are still learning the hard way on the actual firing line. We've put young people in high office, not because they're young, but because in that type of youth we produced, we have found the expert knowledge key to the unselfish spirit of civic that makes the ideal public servant. This is a great revival of the democratic spirit that I am happy to see being carried out here by the Florida Congress of Democracy. Now that it's begun, how about bringing it into every city and town and village in this land, into your own hometown, your own... Because remember, if we make democracy work, not in 5 or 6 places, but in 5 or 6,000, we'll have nothing to fear from enemies within and from enemies across the seas. Our America is only as strong as its Milwaukee's and its Miami's, its New York's and its Main Street towns. We must build the strength of democracy with a steel of good government, honest government, in which all the people take an interest and have a part to play. They lay in the seeds of decay and dissolution in a democracy flourish under boss government, in government by the few insiders, while the rest of the folks let things slide. So this, as I see it, is the answer to the question. What is youth's role in the defense of democracy? First, to appreciate and acknowledge the debt we owe for our blessed privileges of freedom. To learn from history that young people like ourselves, named Jefferson and Hamilton and Smith and Jones, fought the great fight for freedom here 150 years ago. To realize that our freedom now faces the greatest menace in all its history. In a world ringed round with powerful enemies who have set back civilization 1,000 years in the old world. And then they get to work with mind and body to make democracy work here by studying the science of free government and then putting our knowledge to concerted and determined action in the city halls and courthouses of these 48 states of our union. In a word, to make democracy work all the time. And to this cause, this one tremendous purpose, I summon young America tonight. We must not fail. We will not fail.
Thank you very much, Carl Zeidel. It's very rare that the moderator on this program ever comments on what a speaker has said. But I call your attention and all America to the attention that there's a young man who believes in democracy with an evangelical enthusiasm and something that we may all well emulate. We pause now for station identification. This is America's Town Meeting of the Air in session tonight, out of doors in Bayfront Park, Miami, Florida, discussing the question of youth's role in defense of democracy. We've just heard from Dr. George Barton Cutton, president of Colgate University, United States Senator Claude D. Pepper of Florida, and Mayor Carl F. Zeidler of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, before our question period, we're going to hear a 3-minute address from another young American, the winner of our town meeting essay contest just concluded in the high schools of Florida. Albert McFadden of the Sarasota High School, Sarasota, Florida. Albert, will you step up here a minute? Albert, that's right, give him a hand. Albert, that's an awfully good essay you wrote, and I'm sure we're going to enjoy it, but I want to ask you one question. Is this what you really feel deep down in your understanding and in your heart, or is this something you just wrote to win an essay contest?
Yes, sir, it is. At first, I started off by just writing.
You mean yes to the first part of my question or yes to the second part of it?
I mean it's something deep down in my heart that I actually feel. At first, I started out writing, but then I decided that I could get more by really just putting down that what I felt.
That's fine. Well, now, I understand, Albert, that you're a Tar Heel, a fellow Tar Heel. Is that right?
Yes, sir, that's right.
You were born in Charlotte, North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
Well, go to it. I see the title of your essay is The Role of Youth in American Democracy. Let's hear what Albert McFadden has to say on the subject.
Democracy is on trial today and every day. One of the principal reasons that democracy is still surviving is that it has the wholehearted support of young America. Youth have taken, and always will take, a major role in defending the principles of our government. We, the youth of America, are tired of just talking about protecting our ideals. We want to know what we should do to defend democracy. The best way to begin a climb is always at the bottom of the ladder. We, the youth of America, must take the first step in defending democracy by more thoroughly familiarizing ourselves with the Constitution, Pledge of Allegiance to the Flag, the history of democracy in this country, and the Flag Code. We should also make a continued and interested study of current events and to be able intelligently compare present-day Europe under a dictatorship with the present-day America under our democracy. Another step that we, the youth of America, may take is to accept our proper responsibilities and to offer ourselves for public service. We must have a tolerance for all classes within our nation and an understanding of various internal problems. By our lack of class feelings and sympathies, we create a more united democracy. Through youth forums, reading, and questioning, we are able further to develop our minds and thus to broaden our understanding of modern-day democracy and its problems. However, we, the youth of America, must develop physically as well as mentally. Participating in sports and various recreations will help make this possible. Probably the greatest single role American youth has already played in defending democracy was evidenced in the recent draft registration, when millions of young men throughout the entire United States marched up to complete the first peacetime draft registration in American history, all within the space of less than one day. This was truly one of the strongest demonstrations ever given that the people of America will sacrifice their lives, if necessary, for the continued existence of democracy. However, military support alone is not sufficient. Youth must continue to volunteer always and at any time to help build up and defend a peacetime democracy. We must offer our services in the various fields from which training for national defense or war would remove older men and women. The last step that we, the youth of America, must take before reaching the top of the ladder, which will complete our citizenship role, will be the hardest but the most important. We must play an active part in the exposé of un-American activities. This applies particularly to the schools and the various organizations of the young people. The great task before us is, with the natural vigor of youth, to deny vehemently any question of un-Americanism in every phase of life and to contradict the lie of the dictator nations that democracy cannot succeed by proving in everyday practical application that it can and will.
Thank you, Albert, very much. Albert, you're 17 years old, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Now let's say to the youth of America that if you agree or disagree with Albert McFadden and what he said tonight, write your essay to Town Hall and tell us what you think. You may be brought to Town Hall in New York or to wherever we happen to be on a coast-to-coast tour with a town meeting, and we'll ask you, some other youth,
or other youths in America to express their opinions on this program, because this is your town meeting of the air, America's town meeting of the air, and we are doing everything we possibly can to make it that way. Before we go into the question period, thank you very much, Albert. Before we go into the question period, I'm going to ask the speakers if they'll come up around the microphone and clarify any issues that may exist between them. Mr. Cutton, I think Senator Pepper said some things that were intended for your ears. I wonder if you have any questions you'd like to ask him or any observations you'd like to make on his speech. Mr. Cutton, Dr. Cutton.
I should like to ask Senator Pepper if he will give us some illustrations from history where the actions similar to the present government have shortened the depression rather than lengthened it. If the sum total of agony and pain has not been greater on... account of such actions that the present government has taken rather than letting them take their course as they were. I'd like to have some historical examples.
Senator Pepper.
Well, I didn't know that we were going to debate the campaign all over again. At least 25 a million Americans can't be wrong. But we are talking primarily about the role of youth in the defense of democracy. And I don't know of any instances in history where one has hurt youth by giving it a fair chance to live and to work. And that's what we're trying to do now.
All right, Dr. Cutton, will you comment on that? Do you think that youth is getting a fair chance now? Let's join issues here.
It's according to what is meant by a fair chance. Things are being made easier for youth, but I don't believe that that's the best thing for youth. I would refer, Senator Pepper, to the experience of Rome. It went through almost exactly the same thing that they were going through at the present time, when it meant the downfall of Rome eventually, because the youth could not stand up after they had been treated as they are being treated at the present time.
I'm not going to regale this audience with a recital of Roman history now, but I suspect all of us know a little bit about Rome, at least by report and hearsay, if not by reading, and I suspect that there were some of the very reasons that democracy is now defeating that were responsible for the downfall of Rome.
Mayor Zeidler has a comment.
Before we roam all over the oratorical atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen, I should like to ask Dr. Cutton whether or not, in his opinion, he believes that the government of the United States of America owes any opportunity or owes any duty to the youth of this country.
Of course I do. And I believe that they should be given every opportunity. But that is not every opportunity for ease and leisure and shiftlessness, but rather an opportunity to make their way as men have made it in the past. The statement saying simply that things are different than they were in the past doesn't cover the ground. They've always been different, but they always required the same character in order to succeed.
Dr. Cutton, do you mind being specific? What are the things that the United States government is doing now that you specifically object to in your allegation?
Well, the question of making it easier to loaf than it is to work, for one thing.
I wonder, Doctor, what you mean by an invitation to loaf relative to the youth of America. Do you refer to the youth which has an opportunity to work his way through high school and through college?
By the NYA?
They've always had an opportunity to work through high school and college before the NYA was ever thought of. I worked my own way through college and high school, and I know what I'm talking about.
Yes, and I'm privileged to say that I worked my own way through high school and through college, but I know that the statistics show that since the NYA has been in existence, 3.5 million boys and girls in 7 years, or less than 7 years, have had that advantage, and I know they didn't have them the way you and I came through it, Doctor.
They had the money, but they didn't have the advantage of doing the things in their own way and with their own initiative and with their own character. Simply pouring money out to young people in college and high school doesn't give them character or doesn't build up democracy.
Doctor, if you call it pouring money out to the high school youths who get NYA assistance to earn from $3 to $6 a month, and in college to earn from $10 to $20 a month, I don't call that lavish profligacy.
It isn't lavish, and it isn't enough to make any difference either. The fellows that would get through with that could get through without it. I know what I'm talking about because I've had the experience in my own college.
Doctor, I'm afraid that $5 or $10 means a lot more to a lot of people in this country than it does to college presidents and United States senators.
If you gentlemen have no other questions you'd like to ask each other, I think we'd better turn this... Well, at least they joined issues now, didn't they? You may not be convinced one way or the other, but they did join issues. Now, I see a question down here on the front row. Will the young man please rise and state the name of the person to whom your question is directed?
Dr. Cutton, how do you reconcile your statement that youth is now bathed in ease and leisure with a statement by Senator Pepper that 4 million young people now are subject to forced unemployment? Isn't it true that your generation causes unemployment?
Is it true that your generation causes unemployment?
My generation may cause this unemployment by inviting young people to ease and leisure and luxury. But they didn't cause the unemployment in any other way. Now, in regard to Senator Pepper's statement that they are required to be unemployed, I don't know that that's true. There are lots of people in this country that are unemployed. They're not required to be, and if they had the initiative and industry, they wouldn't be.
Senator Pepper, do you want to comment on that question?
Well... undoubtedly, I'm old enough to be accused of some of the things the older generation has done, and hopeful enough, like yourself, to see some improvement on it, so I can comment on it. But undoubtedly, conditions for which the youth are not responsible have produced the situation in which today some 4 million American boys and girls that have just as good character as boys and girls anywhere have or ever had don't have a chance to work.
Senator Pepper.
Yes?
In order to enlist the support of youth in this emergency, the president of Philadelphia said that he intended to establish the right to work in the next 4 years. What I would like to know is, how could this be done in a democratic way with private employers in good times as well as in bad times?
Thank you, Senator. He certainly does want a speech or a solution to the biggest problem that we have, but go ahead and comment it.
Well, essentially, the question is, how could it be possible for the president to achieve his ambition of making it possible for all of America's youth to work under our democratic system of government and private enterprise? Well, there are a great many answers, of course, involved in that question. But essentially, they are, as I see it, these. First, there has to be planning. Not planning that is designed to interfere with our existing institutions, but planning that will make it possible for the youth to get the right kind of an education, which includes skill in how to use their hands as well as their heads. And also, it includes the widening of opportunity for youth to work in private enterprise and by maid work, where private enterprise does not afford that opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Pepper, how can the unemployed youth be a good citizen if he is prevented from exercising his franchise by the existence of the poll tax?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because you may, the whole country perhaps knows, and we are proud to acknowledge it here in Florida, that in 1937,
the legislature of this state abolished the poll tax, and we thank goodness for it. And I've advocated, so far as it's within the power of the federal government, the elimination of the poll tax, the payment of a sum of money, as a condition to the exercise of the franchise in any state in the nation, as far as federal officials being elected is involved.
Are you in favor of eliminating the CCC camps and the National Youth Administration entirely?
Are you in favor of eliminating the CCC camps and the National Youth Administration entirely?
I am. All right. I'd like to say further in elucidation of that, that we're talking about progress these days in terms of ease and luxury. There never has been any progress in the history of the world that doesn't come through pain. And there never will be any progress in this country except in that way. It'll never come through ease and luxury.
Thank you. Young lady, the young lady. Dr. Cutton, another question for you.
What kind of broad national programs do you favor for you?
What kind of broad national programs do you favor for you?
I would favor everything being done to assist private enterprise and not to have private enterprise and the people who are successful continually maligned and misrepresented and persecuted. If we have the private enterprise, we could have the man.
The lady in the light coat there.
Yes?
Dr. Cotton, once more, please, and then we'll take one from the center.
What is your opinion of the American Youth Congress?
What is your opinion of the American Youth Congress?
I'm very much in favor of the young people getting together and working out their own problems and not having them planned from Washington.
Young lady right there.
What can young men and women of Florida do to accomplish better government through the Florida Congress on Democracy?
What can the young men and women of Florida do for better government in Florida through the Congress on Democracy? He wants you to make Dick Evans' speech.
That's right. The young people of the state of Florida and all states throughout the nation can do a better job for democracy by learning about democracy, by learning about the operations of government, by interesting themselves in the great national issues and problems of the day. And only through a vehicle of organized effort, such as is represented by the Florida Congress on Democracy, can these young people of America express themselves forcibly and express themselves with effect.
Ms. Dadler, my boss, the chairman of the Board of Trustees of Town Hall, who conducted our preliminary meeting, has a question he'd like to ask you. Dr. Bester.
Mayor Zeidler, there was a question raised here before as to whether conscription of youth was not in the line of totalitarianism, and whether we had in America a conscription of industry and capital that equaled the conscription of youth. What do you think about that?
You're stating two questions in one sentence. I'll answer the first question first. The first question is, as I understand it, that some people contend that conscription is a totalitarian method in employed in a democratic country. Let me answer that very simply and briefly by saying, of what good, ladies and gentlemen, are democratic rights and privileges if a totalitarian government overthrows us? By that I mean to imply that it's up to us, if we are engaged in a battle of America, to use every ounce of energy and manpower within the limits and framework of our democratic government to see to it that we have sufficient force, to see to it that we have a sufficient mobilization of energy, material, and men to prevent any onslaught from without and any conflict from within. Answering the second part of that question as to whether or not there should be a conscription of industry and a conscription of some of the factories around here in America, let me say that if we are engaged in a fight to the finish to preserve our form of government, it behooves us not only to conscript our manpower, but to conscript something that might be as equally important, and that is the conscription of industry, the conscription of effective means to provide airplanes, to provide food, to provide transportation, to provide effective means of coordinating every single avenue of effective creativeness here in the United States of America. Only through such means can the Battle of America be won.
For the university professor, please give some specific examples of what he calls the laziness of youth.
Dr. Cutton, I think he means you. He said the university professor, and he means the university president. Would you please give some specific examples of what you mean by the laziness of youth? Or did you say that youth was lazy?
I never said that youth was lazy. My whole thesis is that I believe if youth had been called to a sacrificial heroism instead of pauperism, that would have responded, as youth has always responded, to the things that are high and well worthwhile. The divine in them has always come forward. I believe that.
The young man in the brown coat there, yes?
Dr. Pepper.
Senator Pepper. The question.
Does Senator Pepper think it's possible to spend your way to prosperity?
Do you think it's that's a loaded question, Senator.
No, that's all right. Yeah. The question is, do I think it possible to spend one's way to prosperity? Seems that I've heard that question put before. I also heard somebody say, expressing what they thought was an analog to that question, can you drink yourself sober? Well, it may seem that the two are analogous, but I doubt it. Strangely enough, we've been spending more money than we've ever spent before, and the newspapers say we've had the best Christmas business we've ever had before. And I suspect you'll find that the national income will be a great deal higher than it's ever been before, and we may come to discover that there is applicable to the field of economics something of the law that's applicable to the open field, where you plant the seed in the ground, they appear to die, but in the fall you reap the harvest.
Thank you very much, Senator Pepper. Well, we haven't quite solved this problem, but the speakers have thrown a lot of light on it, and by hearing all sides, at least two important sides of this question, and an inspiring address by a young man who believes devotedly and evangelically in democracy, we ought to know more about the subject than we did before. Now, Columbia University Press, which publishes our bulletin Town Meeting each week, includes lists of supplementary articles and reprints of other articles about this subject in each copy of each broadcast. Mr. McCloy, how can they obtain copies of that Town Meeting bulletin?
By sending your name and address together with 10 cents to cover the cost of printing and mailing to Town Hall in New York City. Or for the entire series of 26 broadcasts this season, send $2.50. The address is Town Hall, New York City.
And next week, Mr. McCloy.
Next week from Town Hall in New York, we will bring you the third in our series of national defense, the question, will our camps build citizen soldiers? War makes strange bedfellows. 16 million Americans must be trained for military defense. How? There is a battle raging between those who want more time for vocational and cultural subjects and those who want all the time possible for military training. This vitally important question will be discussed by Dr. Clarence Dykstra, Director of the Selective Service Administration, Dr. Isaiah Bowman, President of Johns Hopkins University and Chairman of the Military Affairs Subcommittee of the National Committee for Education and Defense, and Colonel William H. Draper, Jr., of the General Staff of the United States Army, now assigned to the Selective Service Administration. Mr. Denny?
Just a word of thanks to Mr. Richard Evans of the Florida Congress of Democracy and all of his associates for the able assistance on this program. And we hope you'll all join us in next week's town meeting.
Listen next week for the sound of the town crier's bell, same time, same station.
Town meeting next week. Will our camps field citizen soldiers? Town meeting next week.
This program has been presented as a public service by the National Broadcasting Company and the independent radio stations affiliated with the NBC networks, and has come to you from Bayfront Park through the facilities of radio station WKAT, Miami Beach, Florida.